Hey, what's up, you sexy bitches, and welcome back to this week's Weekly D. And today I have the amazing Harriet Wolf on with me. And today we are going to be talking about her three brands, Hella Heels, Hoa, and Creatures of XIX. I'm super excited for this interview because Harriet tells us a lot about business life, her personal life. So we're really going to try and find out about the person behind the brand, and I'm really excited for you to listen to this. So without further ado, this is the Weekly D. Because honey, if you ain't getting your D on the daily, you better at least begin it once on the weekly.
If you're not getting any and you want some tea, then come and join Dan up on the Weekly D.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I have the amazing Harriet with me. And Harriet, before I get started and get you to do like an intro and stuff, I want to start first of all with a bit of a thank you. So I want to just say thank you so much to you for A, doing this podcast, but also for supporting all of my projects that I've ever done. Anytime I've ever done a charity event, I've done a giveaway, I've done a challenge, I've always had Hella Heels and I've had Creatures of XIX being a sponsor. And I really appreciate you for that because it's so good having like, especially such a big name as a sponsor. So I just wanted to make sure I got a little thank you in today because you're always like helping me with my projects and I really, really do appreciate that. But how are you? Welcome.
Thank you for coming to me for them. Now you also have like pole lols and you in your own right have a big following. So it's just win-win. But thank you as well for asking me.
Yeah, we help each other out, I guess.
Yeah,
absolutely. How are you and how are things?
I'm good. Things are great. Things are quite busy because in a few days we have our birthday month coming up for Hella. So they are quite busy.
How many years?
Four years for Hella. And then
it seems like longer than that.
I know. So Hella's fourth birthday is in May and CXIX is coming up to 8.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have your, actually, do you know, I'm literally going into this because I just realized you've got your new brand as well. Tell us about the new brand. Am I correct in saying it's pronounced Ho, right? It's pronounced Ho.
Hoa. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. I was like, wait, is it Ho or is it Hoa? Because I thought maybe, because I was like,
it kind
this
of is
Harriet. I mean, she's a bit cheeky, a bit sexy. I was like, there's going to be, she's put a spin on the word ho and she spelled it differently.
I've absolutely done that. So I'll tell you the background of that very quickly. So actually, this is a soft launch for Hoa. So we started doing the bikinis. They've got the showgirl clasp. But honestly, like, I really want to go into lingerie and I want lingerie that is easy to take off. Now, whether you are a stripper, whether you're a dancer, or whether you're just actually dropping a bit of a bag on a heap of expensive lingerie for like your partner or for yourself or whatever, if you're wearing expensive lingerie, it's because you want to take it off. And I don't have time for any of this wriggle over the ankles business. I was like, it's all about show. It's like, it's a beautiful thing. You look amazing. And then the actual act of taking it off should also be a show and a beautiful thing, not like the fumble or the behind the back with the bra. So I want to do lingerie that is easy to take on, easy to take off, and that, you can kind of do it in a bit more of a fun way, like front clasps and all that kind of stuff, because most is on the back, and obviously with bottoms, you've got to take off the ankles. So I had an idea a while ago, and I've wanted to do it for a few years now, and originally I was going to call it Heart of a Hustler. But then the whole thing of, okay, well, you might not be a stripper. You might just be someone wanting to buy expensive lingerie, and, you know, it gets dates gone well. Gets to the downtime. And you don't want to have that kind of like awkward fumbly bit. Like, I don't understand how this hasn't been done already. It's all theater. It should be exciting. To when you take it off, it actually be easy to take off. So it was going to be Heart of a Hustler, but then I thought with more mainstream appeal so that we can go mass market, Hoa would be kind of cute because it sounds a bit like Ho. It's the roots of it come from Hustler, but it's a bit more mainstream. And also Hoa sounds very feminine, very beautiful, very light and airy. So Hoa, yes, the third brand that's soft launched with bikinis that's going to have some lingerie coming probably next year now. And also just having the matching bikinis to the shoes, I think is pretty sick.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of covering all bases, really, aren't you? I mean, people, you're kind of now like a one-stop shop for everything, clothing, lingerie. I mean, you've got some swimwear, right, on with HOA. Is that right? Is that swimwear?
Well, we started just with the swimwear, but it's got the showgirl clasp release so that if, because a lot of dancers wear bikinis. So it's far more bikinish. Right. We're not going to promise with HOA that, you know, it's going to keep you supported. You're going to do these mad tricks and everything's going to stay in. It's not about that. It's like cute bikinis that will go with your little shoes and lingerie down the line. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, so this, yeah. So I'm correct in thinking that HOA isn't supposed to be pole wear, is it? So it's not supposed to be supportive for pole and stuff.
It's, you can wear it on the pole, but it's certainly a bikini and, I wouldn't say that you could do a heap of tricks and everything's going to be kept in. We're not thinking about a nipple coming out when you're upside down. It's more swimmy wear. But for some people's body types, they can wear swimwear on the pole and that's fine. For me, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Right.
If I wore a bikini on the pole and I was teaching, people would be getting freebies all around.
Right, exactly. I guess it just depends on the body type, doesn't it? I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
So I want to know... where does all of this like entrepreneurial spirit come from? Like you obviously have something in you or it's been ingrained in you. It must have been from a young age. Do you have someone in your family who has their own business or something? Because it's very rare that you meet someone who has this kind of entrepreneurial businessy spirit that's always thinking of new business ideas and really sort of pushing for like to be a high achiever in this business space. Where does it come from? Do you have anyone in your family who inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly a level of entrepreneurship in some of my family, but not family that I was surrounded by or influenced from a young age. So when I was young, I didn't really have any of that. I definitely certainly wasn't inspired by any specific people, but I had it in me for sure. Like I was like designing specific things in order to put on my list to Santa because I was like, Santa's elves are obviously quite superior with their building expertise. And so I design all these things that like you can't buy in the shops because I was like, Santa will get me. He's got me. His elves, like they can do what I think here. And so I was always designing.
Your mum and dad are like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Like, gosh, wants a mini helicopter for children. Oh. Yeah, so I think I did have quite a strange upbringing and quite a tumultuous upbringing in a lot of ways and definitely a group unit upbringing. And I was creative. I like designing things. I designed sort of like palatial rabbit hutches that were like three floors. And then I'd be like, how much for this wood? And how much for the netting? And how much for this? And then I'd be like, I could sell these for this and make this much. And this is how I think it should look. And this is why it's better than the normal rabbit hutches. So it's been in me from a young age, I think, the entrepreneurship. Also, we didn't have much money. And money was definitely a stressful factor that I was not protected from. So I would see the stress of when there was money problems. And I remember thinking, I want to grow up and not only not have these problems, but be able to take care of my family, be able to look after them and be able to not be worried about how I'm going to pay rent. So money was a big factor. And I think that that had definitely had something to do with it, especially as I got to high school and I went to what was potentially, well, practically a private high school. It wasn't private as in paid, but you had to do a test to get in. Their results were better than the local private school. And so it was full of a lot of people with a lot of money. And I didn't have that. And there was a bit of bullying to do with that. And I certainly missed out on things. So money for me was a big thing, not to have heaps of money, but to be comfortable. So that was the first thing. But then I was also very much nurtured, told that I was amazing well, there's two sections here, but definitely tumultuous upbringing, but was also very loved by a few key people in my family, very, very loved, and grew up sewing and creating stuff as well. So I wouldn't quite say the entrepreneurship comes from somewhere, but definitely like the sewing, the creativity, the, you know, building tree houses and designing a clothing outfit, like an outfit, and then sewing it with my grandma in the sewing room because I was brought up by my grandparents. So I can see where it's come from. But there's not a great answer to that. Yeah.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about like childhood for you. Was it a happy time for you, would you say? Or would you say that that sort of those hard times inspired you? And I only ask that because I feel like so much of my success, I know it sounds terrible, and I definitely do see a therapist about this, you know, I always say to people, I'm like, I feel like I did it because I wanted it to be a fuck you to all the bullies I had at school, to be like, well, actually, look at me now, bitches. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Look at you now, Dan, killing it.
Look at me now.
I had a good time at home, but I also had a hard time at home. Actually, he's dead now, so we can say, but my grandfather was not a nice person and he brought me up. He was really great in some ways, but he was very abusive in others. And so through primary school, I would say I had a pretty good childhood. Like I say, a lot of people from my family sort of clubbing in to help bring me up. And then I got to high school, and high school was a nightmare. I really hated it. I was bullied. I think I was seen as kind of like the chav or the person with no money or whatever. And there was never really any explanations. But growing up, I was always very competitive. Very competitive. I loved to challenge myself. I was very dedicated. When I was in primary school, I was like captain of the boys' football team, captain of the mixed rugby team, captain of the mixed cricket team, captain of the netball team. Yeah. I did running. And then I hit like 13 and I met boys. And then it all went to shit because I was just like going out on my Friday night, like being a little naughty girl. And then on Saturday mornings when there's
being
matches,
a hoer.
And you don't do your Saturday morning matches as well when you've been sneakily drinking a concoction of alcohol from your parents' alcohol cupboard, you know, like that was the way it was. So I was competitive and I was sporty, but that kind of faded away as I got into my teenage years, and the bullying on top of that didn't help. I was very much like, I want to prove myself. Actually, I'm going to be better than all of you lot and all of your parents as well. So screw you and screw your parents for sort of, I guess, underestimating me, being cruel to me, all sorts, like spitting on me in the hallway, throwing my bag out of the classroom window. Like, and the teachers were no better. They were awful too. I feel like they egged it on because the bully's parents were part of like, what do you call it, parent teacher fucking boards or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, so I had
a bad upbringing there, and then or a bad experience there in high school. I always did very well because I worked really hard. Even when I was doing my sport, I would like in the evening go out and just throw that cricket ball at the garage again and again and again, trying to get it in the same spot for the wicket. Like I was very dedicated. And even in high school, I was very dedicated. I was good with my grades, but I was naughty. Like I was smoking. I was on a makeup report because we weren't allowed to wear makeup. We had these really god-awful skirts that had to go below the knee, always top button done up and this like stupid tie. Just to try and kind of like put you in your place and be like, you're going to look stupid and you're going to have to deal with this and it's going to be humiliating. So yeah, you had to have your hair straight back. You weren't even allowed a little bit down. If you had a spot and you put some concealer on it to the head teacher, it was just stupid. You'd miss out on learning because of it. I think it was really pathetic. So that's what happened there. And then when I hit 17, 18, there was a pole studio, Deb Riley's pole studio, opened up in my local area. And when I found that, I honestly found like so much love, so much community, because I was out of the sports world. I'd become so alienated to any community that I should have belonged to. But I was competitive. I was dedicated and creative and, I don't know, a bit naughty like boys. Like, what better thing than pole? And I found a lot of love through pole from that. So that was kind of, yeah, the upbringing to where I got to. Point where I was actually starting pole dancing.
Well, Deb must be so proud to like watch what you're doing now. Like, are you still in contact with Deb?
Yeah, I chat to her every now and then, and when I go back to the UK, I'll try and go in just for a class or something, and then we'll stay for 5 minutes after class and we'll end up chatting for like an hour. It's great. I love her. She's amazing. She's one of the pioneers of the industry. Very lucky
she
to
was.
Have a big studio just down the road from me.
I know. And I just, I love Deb because she gives such a genuine vibe and happiness for people with their success. I never get any disingenuous vibe from Deb, which is why I really like Deb Riley. We're talking about Deb Riley, by the way, everyone, if you're wondering who this is. Deb Riley is like one of the pioneers of pole. She was polling
like
before
world pole dances. Hey?
Right,
like,
exactly.
First world pole dance competition. She was the judge.
Yeah, exactly. So if you remember all those videos of like Felix Kane and stuff, like when she like won all the world championships, Deb wasn't even competing then. She was judging then. That's how long ago she started pole. So yeah, so she is like one of the pioneers, and I love her to bits. So I want to talk about the UK to Australia transition and why, and just because people must wonder and be like, why is she in Australia? Or like, what made you go to Australia? Did you chase a boy there or what happened?
No, I didn't chase a boy. I'm not a chaser, Dan. They chased me. Yay! So when I was 11 years old, my auntie and my uncle, who I used to live with my auntie when we all lived with my grandparents, and then she met my uncle, they moved down the road, and they looked after me on the weekends. When I was about 11 years old, my uncle got a really great job out in Australia, and they moved there. And that was devastating for me because they were my rock. They were a sense of home and stability. And it was really sad. They were really immediate members of family. So when they moved out there, I think they had a lot of guilt, and so they should have done. And so my uncle would fly me out every few years, and I'd be one of those kids that's like put on a flight, and then they take you off at Dubai and they put you into the children's room, and then they come in and they're like, next flight, Harriet. And I'm like, I am. And then they put you on the next flight, and then they make you sign a thing that if your family member isn't at the airport on the other side, they can just ship you back because they're responsible for you, right? So right. My auntie and uncle paid for me to come out because he'd got such a great job, and he had such a terrible upbringing too, and didn't start off the best, and he like worked his way up, became a sparky or an electrician, and went to night school, and then he ended up getting a job at this big oil company, but he had to move to Perth. So they flew me out for every few years. I was going out there and to Perth, Australia, and I just loved it. It was calm, it was home, it was family. I got to escape all of the crap back from school, from my granddad, all of that. This was real heaven for me. So I fell in love with the place. I really did. And when I was going off to uni, I really wanted to come to uni to Australia, and they didn't like their university courses for international students are super expensive. So I couldn't really do that. But then after uni, and then after my first corporate job, I moved over, and it was always in my head. I really, really wanted to. So that's sort of, yeah, how I got to Australia. And then I was here for a few months. Well, about a year. And then I did meet a boy, but I didn't chase him. I met a boy, and then I had to move back to the UK, and we did long distance for 8 months, which was super sucky. And then we figured out
why did you have to move back?
Because my visa. So my visa was up. I had to move back, and then I was miserable in the rain thinking my Aussie boy is out there still. And we figured out how to get back, and got a visa for me to get back. And then as soon as I got back, we put all of our ducks in a row in order to get me on the partner sponsorship visa. And I was with him for 5 years. We're not together now, but a lot of good love there. He was really great. And we just wanted different things in our future life. But I technically kind of did come back because I really wanted to be with him, but also because of Australia.
Oh, that's nice though. Hmm. And do you think the UK is in your future, or do you think that Australia is where your heart is now?
Australia is where my heart is now.
Oh, I love that. Changing the subject.
Run away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. Me and Mitch have this conversation all the time, and I've talked about it so many times in this podcast, but, you know, we talk all the time about how, like, oh, we could live anywhere if we wanted to. You know, we don't have kids. We don't, you know, we have dogs, but obviously you can move dogs anywhere. I remember when Sarah Scott moved to Thailand, we were like, oh, we should move to Thailand. It's amazing Thailand. But do you know what? It's everywhere has its advantages and disadvantages. It's so funny. Like, 100%. I was talking to someone just the other day about Germany, and she was like, oh, it's so expensive in Germany. I was like, yeah, but you've got a better life here because your healthcare system, I think, is better than ours. I was like, so, you know, everywhere has its advantages and disadvantages, right? You're never going to have someone that's perfect.
100%. But, the British people are the best people in this world. A Tuesday night in the UK in a pub is more busy Saturday night here in Sydney, which is where my downfall came, because I can't say no to a good time. But here there's definitely more of a healthy lifestyle, but the pubs, the atmosphere, the gigs, the amount of music that comes out of the UK, it's an amazing place. And whenever I come back, I love it. It's really great. Yeah, they all have their
pros. But we just don't have much sun, that's all. We just don't have much sun. Apart from that, it's a pretty decent place.
Well, with global warming, there might be some silver linings here.
Fingers crossed. So I wanted to change just like a little bit over to something else that's just happened recently, because I just wanted to ask, and I actually meant to ask you before we started, but I'm sure it's something you won't mind answering now. Did Hella Heels sponsor the Snoop Dogg tour? Because they were all wearing Hella Heels, right? Was that a deliberate thing? Or
kind of, sort of. So the Australian leg of the tour, when Nicole got in touch with me through Miles, shout out to Young Polemaster, my boy.
We love Miles.
I love him. So Nicole Paul had reached out to me on WhatsApp and was just like, hey, Miles has said da 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 da. Anyway, it got down to it that it was really, really last minute. So I had to drive to the warehouse that usually won't, like, we have to give 24 hours because it's a warehouse that ships various brands. But I have to give 24 hours notice if we want them to pick certain styles and then go and pick them up for a photo shoot or for ambassador or whatever it might be. And I just had to real quick time go to the warehouse, pick them up. I dropped them off with the girls and then they wore them for the Sydney part of the tour. There was a few other people in the tour in Australia that reached out to me directly beforehand, because I think just those like branded Empire kicks, they're so dope and they look so dope. So people wanted them. So a few people like Carly Hunter reached out and was like, can I get these? So we shipped them off to them. Free of charge, so kind of sponsored, yeah. We gave Nicole and the Sydney lot a heap of the thigh-high branded Empire kicks and a couple of like outfits as well. And then we did a couple for the rest of the tour. But I feel like we fully sponsored the Sydney one, like everyone was kitted out. But the rest of the tour, we couldn't get stuff in time fully. So, yeah, I would say we sponsored it. And you know what? Nicole messaged me and she's like, Snoop came into the room and was like, oh my God, these shoes are dope. Like, what company does these? Maybe I want to do something with them. That is so cool. So I was like, okay, now I'm happy. Like, that's amazing to me, because I used to like listen to Young and Wild and Free as like a late teen. Like, young and wild. Yeah. And I think Snoop's amazing. And I think everyone who got that gig is incredible. And it's just what an amazing time for the whole pole community. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, it was great exposure, wasn't it? I mean, I have to be honest, like, I wasn't a Snoop fan in terms of his music, but the only thing I have really liked Snoop for is actually I've seen, so I really like watching comedy roasts where they'll have like a celebrity and they roast the celebrity. And he's actually done a couple of them. And he's actually really funny. Yeah. I just think he's a funny guy, but he's just lived a life, isn't he? Right.
A dream.
Oh, hey, sorry to interrupt your podcast. I just wanted to come on and tell you a little bit about our sponsor for today. And today's sponsor obviously has to be CXIX and Hella Heels. So if you don't own a pair of Hella Heels, like, are you literally living under a rock? Their shoes are amazing. Harriet has got some awesome designs. So listen, while you're listening to this podcast, why don't you go and check out CXIX brand and go and check out Hella Heels, because they have some awesome designs. And obviously, Harriet is a cool ass chick anyway, so you need to go and support her brand. But more than anything, I just really like the designs that she comes up with. Some of these designs that she has at the heels are so awesome. I literally, even in this room right now, I actually have, and I'm going to prove it on video, I have a box of Hella Heels right here. They're the black kicks. And I love them so much. They're so beautiful. Look at these. Oh, they're so gorgeous. But yes, go and get some Hella Heels because they're amazing. And we love Harriet. So let's get back to the podcast. Tell me more about the working with, you know, brands, working with, you know, people like Kylie Jenner. You've had, is it like Nikita Dragon as well?
Yeah, we had Doja Cat, Nikita Dragon, Kylie Jenner, Doja on a couple of occasions. Honestly, working with them has just been a blessing. I say with them. We're not working with them. We're working with their stylists. It's just been a blessing. Like, their stylist would drop into our DMs and be like, hey, we need this select for this date. And we would just do everything we can to express and get it to them. So that was pure luck, really. Like, with the clothing, with CXAX, for the first bit when we started, I did try and reach out to some more mainstream like faces and names, but you just never get a response. And I think you've just got to work at what you're working at and people will come to you. And with the shoes, it just kind of, it happened. And I mean, I wouldn't say it was like a bit of good luck, because obviously there's a lot of work that goes into it, but we were approached by their stylists.
Right.
Yeah, it was just amazing. It was pretty sick.
And I know that it's influencer marketing is something that you do so well. And I know you work with a lot of, like, especially pole influencers to promote your product. So, and these influencers will wear your product, but they'll also put in the caption, hey, these are where my heels are from. And they'll give kind of a shout out. Can I ask though, what is the benefit with things like, I know with the Kylie Jenner thing, for example, it's like, whoa, that's so cool. Like Kylie's wearing my heels, but to the business, what benefit is there? Like, some, I always try and think like, yeah, I mean, it is cool. I mean, are you allowed to share those photos? Do you have any rights to those photos to be able to put them on your website and stuff like that?
Honestly, it's not that deep. Like it's good for visibility, brand awareness, people see it. It's also the reason we have a code is to see how well people are doing. Like, are people posting and it's an amazing bit of content, but they don't have many people use their code. If that's the case, then great, they've done an amazing bit of content that we can reshare. Some people might not even do like the most kind of crisp, beautiful content, but obviously they have such a loyal and engaged audience that their code will be used heaps, even if you can't really see whatever they're wearing or their shoes or whatever. So it's for it's definitely for visibility. We don't own anything, I don't believe, like rights to their pictures or their photos. And we don't really put that much in place. So we have a small group of content creators who do create content on a contract every month for us, a certain amount of videos, so we can post them on ours. So we have a small group, like literally 4 or 5 people. This is just for CXAX, nothing for Hella. And we only just started doing that just so we could get a bit more content of people doing stuff on the pole where the clothing can be seen well. But generally with our ambassadors and influencers and the people that we've worked with over the year, the mass majority for the entirety of Hella and for most of CXAX is all relationships. It's people that I've met and that I like, even from day dot, like working with Felix. Like, I'd gone to a studio. We got on really well. It was great. I was like, hey, here's some free shit. And she's like, can I swear in this?
Yeah, of course you can. Okay, of course.
I'd be like, here's some free shit. And she'd try it. And I'm like, if you love it, post it, great, you know. And then she did. And so even now to this day, like I think ambassador and influencer marketing is dying a little bit. I really do. Codes aren't being used that much. It's not that much what you think, but I think front of mind and visibility is important, but also working with those people that you are inspired by, that you look up to, that you think make amazing content, or even just a great personalities that do amazing beautiful videos or pictures, and to be able to make sure that I'm working closely with them and that they get free stuff, that they don't have to pay for it because this is their job and they're not paying for it. And then in exchange, we're getting content out of it anyway. I feel like it's more of an extended team, as it were. It really is. It's an extended team.
I think I meant more like, because obviously, like, if Felix shares it, it's obviously brand awareness and stuff because she's within the pole community. I think I meant more for people like Nikita Dragon.
That's just my ego there, we can put it on our website. When Kylie wore them, we didn't see a spike in 8-inch heels because normal girls can't wear 8-inch heels out, and that's who her market is. But you know what it gave me? A bit of street cred, a bit of gloating. Oh yeah, I enjoyed that little bit. It's pretty cool, and it's great because for my family and like my little brothers, I was like, you know, a Kardashian Jenner wore my shoes, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, Harriet's cool. So it gave me that. And we did do a promotion when Kylie wore them just to kind of like bring it to everyone's attention. And we were like, plus the shoes she's wearing, use this Kylie 10 code and you'll get 10% off for the next week or whatever for the pink shoes she wore and the blue shoes that Stassi wore. So we did a bit of a marketing exercise around it like that, but we did not see no spike in those in sales because it's not a product that normal people would buy.
But it's great content for your website and stuff.
Absolutely. And love the Kardashian Jenners. Like, love them or hate them, it's a big deal for a small business like mine. Huge deal. I was about to fly on Jetstar and I saw that come through and I'm there like cramped in a sardine tin on Jetstar. And I'm like, this bitch just wore my heels, man. Like, this is fucking sick.
That is cool. No, I have to say, like, don't get me wrong. It was more just like, I was intrigued to know if it did have any like impact on the business as such. But I mean, you basically, I guess, obviously, like you said, you want to give them to people that inspire you. And I assume people like Kylie Jenner probably do inspire you. I very much am inspired by the Kardashians. And I know people think, oh, why inspired by them? But actually, people don't appreciate how clever those women are. They are so fucking clever. Like, they
and
are
also,
not stupid
like,
at all.
Let's be real here. Big companies have been profiting off sexy women for long enough. Like, good on them for profiting off themselves. Absolutely.
Right.
But to answer your question, no, we did not see a sales spike at all. There was no, like, all of a sudden a spike or anything. But I think long-term benefits are different because people take you more seriously. There's a bit of street cred there. We've got it wasn't just she wore them. It actually went on the packaging because the picture of her wearing them went on the packaging for that cosmetics.
Right.
So I have the packaging in the office. It's a talking point. People come in and they're like, oh, look at these little stripper shoes. And then they're like, oh, Kylie Jenner too. And I mean, probably shouldn't be the case, but it is. They just go, oh, actually, that's a really cool business. And now I can relate to it more, or now I have more of a understanding that you guys aren't like a tiny side business, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah. I totally agree with you. I think it was awesome. When I saw it, I was like, bloody hell, so that is amazing. And it's great, really, that people like this are reaching out to you. But yeah, so with the like designs and concepts that you have for within the brand, I know you said like you get people read like their, what was it you called them? Their so
stylist?
Kylie's stylist.
Yes.
Do you have like something similar within like CXIX and within like Hella, someone who's like stylizing these designs for you and giving you concept ideas, or is it literally just like you?
That's me.
Yeah, you literally just draw some shit on a piece of paper and you're like, hey, someone make this, go.
Oh, well, behave. We're in 2023 now, are we? I draw it on an iPad.
Oh, wow.
So
you're
I do my drawings
so progressive.
On my iPad because I've moved on from paper. No, I do
so
a
bougie.
Majority of the designs. I do a majority of the designs. I also, even when I'm designing, I have a concept in mind, which then makes it much easier when you're coming through to what is the marketing plan going to be? What is the launch plan going to be? What is the concept behind the marketing photo shoot? What kind of like a whole vibe are we bringing forward here? And that's the whole exciting thing. Like, yes, people like good quality clothes. They like clothes that fit well, but they also like the fun of kind of like buying into a whole energy or a whole vibe, getting it through, unpackaging it. And that vibe follows through. And then when they put it on, they feel really great. And that great feeling is really what you want to be aiming for. So you don't want to just be like, here's a black top. You want to be like, here's this style. And then you put it in this whole setting for a photo shoot and you kind of like, you build this whole concept around it. It's a majority me. We have worked with Adam Lin on a few occasions. He worked with me, oh gosh, since COVID, all timelines have gone to crap. But he worked with me for quite a while. And even today, like the Dollhouse collection, a couple of those items were from his design. So we worked with Adam for a little bit. He's definitely pulled some stuff forward, worked with him on it. He was amazing. And I also hope to work with him in the future. So I would say all me, but Adam has had some designs come through as well. And that was really great. And I loved working with Adam. And I want to work with him again. We just need to hook up again. And it's just time and everything. And all of a sudden you've sent a message to someone 6 months ago and you've gone, yeah, let's do another collection together. And then it just, I don't know, all of a sudden it's April.
Well, Adam's busy. I mean, Adam's busy making TikTok videos. So where is he going to find
know.
Time to do this? I know.
And even Adam's designs, like Adam's designs, I also had influence on, or I was like, I want you to design something a bit like this, or we're doing this kind of collection. Can you do some stuff for that? And then in the same vein, when Adam was working for me, I would design something and send them over to him for his feedback. So we worked really well collaboratively, I felt. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
The majority of stuff and all of Hella is my design, my concept. I'm there on the shoot. I direct it. I do absolutely everything from initial drawings to wearing to sampling to testing to taking it to photo shoot to briefing the team on how we're going to launch this, how we're going to execute, when we're going to start sneak peeking, doing the pre-intro, what the text is going to be, how we're going to like play it, if anyone's going to get early access, if so, who, all the way up to post-launch and
right.
after the launch. Yeah.
And do you ever like, and obviously this must happen every now and then where you've got like a, I don't know, let's say for example the marble design shoes that you've got, or any of the designs for the clothes that you have. You have it, you've like, you're getting all the marketing materials ready, you're super excited, and maybe it doesn't do as well as you'd hoped it do. Or maybe like you've had some that have been a complete flop that you've been like, right, this was like not what I expected it to be. How do you deal with that? And like, do you ever let that knock you down? Or how do you, I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do you put a positive spin onto negative experiences like that, where sometimes maybe something didn't do as well as you'd hoped it would?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a few things here. So firstly, you do grow thicker skin the more you go into it. There are hits that you have to take. And in the past, I'd be really sad about it. Whereas now you just got to keep pushing and keep moving and move forward. Every bad launch or every, I mean, I wouldn't, oh, let's behave here. I wouldn't say we've ever had a flop, but we've definitely had ones that didn't do as well as I would have liked. And in those scenarios, we look at it and I'll go, what went wrong? What was wrong with the product or the marketing? Did we not do enough of this? Did we not do enough of that? You know, we're all human. You take a few days, you take a step back, you feel a bit sorry for yourself, you lick your wounds, you get back up, you have a look at what went wrong, and you make the plan going forward. And also, like, I have a really great support network and a great team, and my team's really great for that, because we can all kind of rant about it together, have our talk, discuss it, figure it out, and then be excited for the next thing or how we're going to improve. It comes with time. There's no magic fix for that kind of thing. It comes with time, and I am not exempt from feeling like crap when stuff goes wrong. But you've just got to try and put a bit of a timer on it. And after an hour, 5 minutes, a day, maybe a week, depending on the scale of how bad something has gone wrong or happened, you go, that's enough now, done with this, moving forward, you know, let's go.
The thing is, with this industry and with any industry, really, you've got to make some mistakes, haven't you? Because if you don't, you're never going to know what your customers actually want, what they like, what they dislike, and you have to make some mistakes. I mean, there's been so many things that I've done with, maybe even on my social media, like, or, you know, with, like, events that I've tried to run that haven't done as well, and I've thought, oh, okay, and yeah, it makes you feel a bit shit at the time, because you kind of feel like, I don't know if you get this, but I get this kind of like, this vibe that people are like watching and waiting for me to fail on something. So I'm just like, oh, I don't want anyone to see that or whatever. But then I just remind myself, I'm like, listen, like, you're not gonna succeed on absolutely everything. Like, do you ever get that kind of like, where you feel like people are watching, you know, CXIX or Hella or Hoa, and they're just like wanting it to fail? Or am I, do I just need to see my therapist a few more times?
You need to do your therapy. No, I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure some people would love me to fail and would love the businesses to fail, but I'm staying in my lane, and I feel like I'm so A, busy, and B, focused on what's happening, that even when I kind of catch wind of something happening or something that may, or someone's watching and I know they're watching and I know that they don't want me to do well, but honestly, I'm too busy to ponder over it. And so you just keep focusing on yourself. If someone rips you off, you could spend ages bitching about how they've ripped you off or how they've done this or how they've done that, but it's actually not going to help anybody. But if you just have like 3 minutes, coffee, I'm so annoyed about that, blah, 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 and then you get back to your desk, you get back to work, and you just remember that It's only your life that you can control. You keep working at it, then that's what's going to be A, best for the business, but also B, best for my mental health. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I think so, you've got to remember tricky, as well, actually.
Yeah. I think I've just got blinkers now. Blinkers. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. I feel like I'm definitely getting better with things like that. I used to worry way too much about what people thought of me, and then I just realized that actually, like, if people are really sitting there waiting for me to fail, that's actually in some ways kind of a compliment, because it's like, wow.
And also,
like, really,
if people are waiting for you to fail, boring losers, they should be spending their time on their goals, their inspiration, their life, their personal life, their business life, and making it better and being a good, caring, decent person. If they're watching you trying to see you fail, then screw them. Boring losers, don't need it. Absolutely
but
not.
Do you
that's
ever
how I
get
feel
a vibe especially for someone like you, actually. And
Dan? Who's hating on me?
Yeah, I know. Like, I was just speaking to someone who hates you, Dan. Like, you know, especially with someone like you who's had so much success, probably financial success. I'm not going to ask you how much, but obviously, like, you've got three brands. They're all doing amazing. They've grown to a crazy size. I mean, I saw a fucking video of you in your shoes climbing to the top of a mountain of hella heels. Like, you know, when you see you in these warehouses, people are like, whoa, like, this isn't like a little home project. She's really making a massive business of this.
No, I have three warehouses. I've got UK, North America, and Australia now. Three.
That's nuts, isn't it? But do you, and I guess like what I'm trying to say is it's like, because obviously you've got all this success and stuff, you get two types of people. You get the people like, so, and I used to be the other person, but nowadays, like, so when I see you, it inspires me and it makes me think, God, I want to do that. And I want my businesses to do that. And I am inspired by it. And I've actually got a friend, I don't know if you've ever heard of a company called In The Style. Have you heard of it? It's a UK company. And they're basically
ASOS. Oh, wait, a big clothing business.
Correct, yes.
Owned by a gay guy. Yes.
Correct.
Love it.
Yeah. So Adam, I met him years and years ago. So I actually said a friend. I'd probably say he's more an acquaintance. I know him, like, but we met a few times back in the day when he was at uni. And I've just had him on my Instagram and my Facebook since. And watching his journey could have gone either way. I could have been like, oh, like, I wish that was me. Or I can be like I am. And I'm like, fuck, that is so inspiring. And whenever something big happens for him, I'm like, fucking good for him. Like, I'm really happy for him. Do you ever get like family members, friends who you start to notice are like pulling back a bit from you because of your success? Have you ever had that?
Not close friends, no. And not close family, no. I haven't had that. But I think the friends and the family that I have are A, really, really decent. And B, they've seen A, how hard I've worked. Which is stupid hard, stupid hard, stupid, stupid hard. And then B, they know how much I've sacrificed. So there was a long time where I don't feel like I was super present. I mean, I wasn't, like, I was falling asleep at 11 p.m. with my laptop on my chest. And then I was waking up at 7 a.m. and it was go, go, go. And for years, I worked every weekend, every night, late at night, early in the morning. I can't remember the last time I took a lunch break, to be honest, but you can do that without burnout to an extent when you are really passionate about what you do, the community that you're in, the creativity, the stuff that you bring in when it excites you. You can do that. If you're not genuinely super into something and it's about money, then that you cannot work at that level. But I think my friends and family have seen that. So I don't think there's been any of that with my friends and with my family. I've been quite lucky, but I also have quite small circles, and I think if I had bigger ones, and I'm sure there are people that were like, not acquaintances, but not good friends, but probably in that middle bit that may sort of hate me or pull away or whatever, but I've not noticed it. Yeah. The good people have stayed around. And I do think that it's actually impressive that they stayed around, because I don't know, I've not been present at times. I've definitely like not been there, not gone to certain events, not worked on my personal life in the way that I could. There's been sacrifices.
Yeah. Right. And talking of these sacrifices, like, how would you, I hope you don't mind me asking about this, but like love life, how does that affect, you know, dating, relationships, running? And also, really random, but do you ever find that men are intimidated by such successful women?
Ooh, okay. So I was with my ex, the one who I said I came back to Australia for 5 years. And I think that that relationship was really great. I had a good relationship. He was very supportive. He was very, I would say, alpha and confident. And so that meant there was no intimidation there, even though sometimes I was being an absolute baller. But he, I don't know, he just held his own. So it didn't affect it then. Since then, I don't know whether people get intimidated, but I do find it hard to sort of find your equal, because I've got all this exciting stuff going on. And then you want to have someone that's like also got passion or excitement. So I think maybe there a little bit. But I also do think that even love life for me is compromised, because I'm very busy. very busy.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So you kind of don't have much time to put yourself out there. You also, like, I'm really practicing self-care at the moment. So brushing my hair, key. Doing my makeup has just started, even if it's just a little bit in the morning, because for so long I feel like I was working so hard and I wasn't brushing my hair. I was just pulling it up, putting it in a bobble or a hair tie, and just dragging my sorry ass into work. And so you look like crap and you feel like crap and you ain't got no time to be getting your makeup on for dates. Like, absolutely not. And that's changing now. Like, I'm trying to spend a bit more time on myself, because 10 minutes in the morning makes a huge difference to how I feel for the whole day.
Right.
Whereas mm-hmm. when just dragging my sorry ass, as I say, into the car with my hair just scraped back, not brushing it, no makeup on, looking really tired because I've been working constantly, that had an impact on my confidence, my self-confidence and how I feel, and also my potential to meet people. I'm not going to bump into anyone like that and be like, hi, how are you?
And when I said about, have you ever met anyone who has been intimidated, like men, sorry, specifically, like that have been intimidated, like, have you ever met anyone who's just like, can't be with you because they're just intimidated by the businesswoman you are?
I did go on a date with a guy that actually said mid-conversation, oh, you must think I'm really boring. And I wanted to be like, yes, I do think you're really boring. But instead, obviously, I was like, no, it's fine. I'm not going to be a dick here. So maybe they think that, but I don't hear it from them, apart from that one that said,
you're like, no, really not at all. Blocks is from number blocks on Instagram.
Not at all. Tell me more about what food you like on pizza.
Yeah, tell me more about your 9-to-5 office job.
Oh, but I don't mind that. I think that's like a stable thing, at least. And if someone's passionate about other things or has hobbies, then that's an amazing thing. But I just,
True. Yeah,
it's hard to meet someone when you've got a lot about you. You want someone who's also got a lot about them.
Yeah,
and it's also hard to meet someone who's actually busy all the time.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's funny, cause, you know, I made a joke about the 9-to-5 thing, but, you know, if someone's passionate about their 9-to-5 and it's a job they enjoy, then actually it can be really interesting to talk to them about it. But sometimes when you get people who start, oh, I hate my job, like, oh, I'm just like, well, do something about it then, like, do something.
Yeah, but, or I must say, or they hate their job, but they are so passionate about, I don't know, deep sea diving, and they do that on the weekends, or they have something to talk about, something that is passionate. And honestly, I find it so attractive if someone is passionate about something. Like, it's a beautiful thing. We all need to find our passions in life.
Yeah,
our genuine passions. Yeah. What's your genuine passion, Dan? Tell me.
My genuine passion, I guess, you know, it sounds so sad, but my genuine passion is actually
Dan. It's being a sassy
bitch. Yeah, I mean, that's been a passion since a young age. Now, I think my genuine passion is running my businesses, and I know that sounds really sad to say that, but I really enjoy running businesses. I enjoy it, and I love that thrill of it. I love that thrill of like trying something new. Does it work? Does it not? And like the build up to it and stuff. But in terms of hobbies, I like, obviously, pole is like the hobby that turned into my job, but actually I like a bit of skiing. I know you do as well. And that does actually kind of lead us into our next thing, which was your Canada trip where you did the photo shoot in minus 20 degrees. Oh my God. But yeah, I mean, do you ski, by the way?
Well, I do, not well, but yes. And I love it and I want to do more of it. I started quite late. So Canada was my first proper ski trip. It was only at the like ski dome place that I'd done before. It was amazing. Okay. And it felt really good to not be on the phone, to be just out in nature, in the wilderness. I found a lot of peace in my mind. And yeah, I did a shoot there recently and that was amazing. It was good.
Yeah. I think there's something about, and again, this does kind of come back to being the business owner thing. Like there's something about skiing where, you know, you kind of have your phone sort of tucked away in your ski suit, so you don't really bother getting out too much because it's just too cold to bother. And you're in the mountains and there's just like no noise. And it's just so peaceful. It's just something really calming about it, I really like.
And then you hear me ski past like, ah!
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. I always make jokes to people. I'm like, oh, listen, like, don't watch me skiing because it like, you probably know the term snow plowing where you like have your skis in like a triangle. And I'm like, That is literally me. But you know, I enjoy it, and I go down really slowly. Like, Mitch loves to fucking bomb down. Like, he'll bomb down and wait for me at the bottom. And I just like going down slowly because obviously, like, my job requires me to be able to use my body. So I'm just like, I just like to be really careful and just enjoy my time. But yeah, that's my kind of outside hobby, I guess. But so what was it like shooting in minus 20 like temperatures?
It was,
that must have been horrible.
Let me tell you, so cold. So you cannot explain what minus 20 is like until you are in basically underwear in minus 20, and it was so cold. So this trip, like, me and my EA and my logistics coordinator, we flew out to Vancouver. We had
a
cracker
time
there.
Please?
Pardon, sorry?
EA, executive assistant?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
So my executive assistant and my logistics coordinator flew out to Vancouver. It was actually meant to just be a couple of days to kind of like find our bearings before we drove to this warehouse. Went to Vancouver, and I don't know, we just decided we were going to be ballers. So we did some strip club research and went around all the strip clubs, buying the girls drinks and asking them, like, going in and like watching the stages, seeing what kind of things people do and what kind of shoes they wore and blah, blah, blah. And then we went to visit our warehouse.
Did you see any Hellas?
I didn't see Hellas, but it was really interesting, actually. So I went in, and then Kirsty, the logistics coordinator, she was going up to people and she was like, hey, can I buy you a shot? And also, have you ever heard of Hella Heels? And they were all like, yeah, love them, amazing. And we've heard they're better quality, blah, 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 blah. Follow them, look at this, follow them already. And I was like, and then she'd introduce them to me and she'd be like, this is the owner of Hella Heels. And they'd be like, oh, and I was like, oh, and it just felt really great, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I was like, why are you not wearing Hellas? And there was two real main reasons, I guess. One is that North America really like to buy from adult superstores. Then they don't buy online still. Like, they like to go in store. So that was a big barrier.
I wonder why they want to shop in store. I don't blame them. You know why,
because
right?
It's nice? No.
No, because they can pay cash, right? I assume that was what it was for.
I'm
like, wait, because surely they want to spend their tip money, right? I was going to say, why would they want to buy online? But actually,
Dan,
this is a
good
point.
You're not just a pretty face. Not just
Honey.
A pretty face.
But do you ever think about actually stocking your stuff in these adult shops so people can go buy them in cash?
So the second reason, which was also a reason that the only stockist in Vancouver told us, so or the only adult store main one, the second reason was that they were like, oh, but it's just customs and import taxes from the US and Australia. Like, we can't do it. We then went to the adult superstore and they were like, we actually signed up to be a Hella Heels reseller years ago, but our stock was stuck in customs for a couple of months and the customs fees are heaps. I was like, you know, we ship from here now. And they were all like, amazing. So it was a great trip because I just realized that it's very hard to market, very hard to advertise and market to strippers, very hard. And so word of mouth is really important, but it's very, very difficult to spread the word that, hey, we're shipping from here now. So that was a big thing. And I did not realize the extent of that until I went out there. So that was really, really key, really important. Then
it must
we went
be hard as well because a lot of them aren't actually out as strippers a lot of the time. They don't want...
Absolutely.
And maybe that's
and also,
why they're buying in the shops as
ads.
Well.
Yeah, you can't advertise like, hey... people who are strippers on Facebook, like, you can't advertise
Correct.
That. It's hard enough to advertise as it is. You can't advertise a bikini very well. So you can't promote to those people, which makes it really difficult. And also, you're never going to have something go viral that just says, hey, we ship from the US now. We ship from the US now. Please go viral video. Like, our viral videos go viral because of the product themselves. So yeah, that was really hard. And then we went to the warehouse, which was great because I told the two girls from my team we were going to meet our photographer, a model, and another girl that works for me from my team that lives in Toronto. We were going to meet them out in Little Whistler for this photo shoot. But first, we were going to go to the warehouse. And I was like, let's drive. I love a road trip. I love more than anyone a road trip. To pick up my puppy, my little dog, I drove 15 hours. 15. I love a road trip. Roof
there and back, or 15 hours there?
There.
And then 15 hours back?
And then I did a road trip back for like a week so that it was shortened. I love a road trip. Podcasts, music. I can think in my head because I'm not like at my computer. Big open sky. Like I take the roof off a little bit. I've got this Jeep and you can like flip the top bit of the roof off and the sun's on me and I love a road trip. So I said to the girls, let's do this amazing road trip. It'll be amazing. Let's drive to the warehouse. They were like, yeah, okay. One of the girls is like, I'm not driving. I can barely drive in normal circumstances. So I'm not driving on the other side of the car, on the other side of the road. Like it just, no. But the logistics coordinator, Kirst, she was like, yeah, I'll share the driving with you. It was meant to be 3 hours. I shit you not, this took 6-7 hours. We found out after we'd picked up the hire car, when we got to the warehouse after a very traumatic drive, they were like, you drove Death Valley? We were like, sorry, what now? Death what? Death Valley? And they were so shocked that we'd taken this drive. And then they were like, oh my God, you got in last night. Did you drive at night? And we were like, yeah, we drove at night. And they were like, oh, there was a blizzard last night. They were like, oh God, we never drive that road. And sometimes like my husband will drive in the day. I'd sometimes drive in summer, but never at night and never in a blizzard. And then it dawned on them that they were in a rental car and they were like, do you have snow tires? And we were like, no. And they were like, oh, because we drove this mad, mad road that literally had a steep drop on one side and just like a valley bit in the middle between the other road going the other direction, a steep drop. And we're getting into the snow and we're getting into like the blizzard. It goes so dark. We're learning where the curve in the road is by looking at the Google map and going, there's a curve in the road here. There's a curve in the road here. And we're driving at 50 with our hazards on while these trucks are coming past us with chains on their snow tires or whatever at 120, like boom, boom, and you're skidding. It's the most terrifying thing we've ever done, to the point where poor Kirsty, logistics coordinator, when we finally arrived, we'd all survived. We're here to tell the story, which is great. But she got out and she nearly vomited. It was the most scary drive of my life. We were a bit shaky. And the warehouse were like, you drove here? You idiots. And I was like, it's team building. It's fine. So that was the second part of the trip. And that was a lot to take in.
Wow.
But then we had the most amazing time at the warehouse. And then, yes, we went to Little Whistler. The model Liv was there. Elise, my photographer, and Michaela, who's been doing social media now for me for a few years, working for me, and I've never got to meet her because of COVID. And she's a little hottie, so she obviously jumped in on the shoot too. And we had the most amazing time. But to answer your question, finally, after my big ramble, is to shoot in minus 20, you get up early, you pump the music, we had the stereo going, and because we had that camaraderie and everyone cares, it was actually like, fuck it. Let's do this. Music pumping, get out there. You couldn't shoot for long. It got to the point where we had to go in a few times because the photographer's finger stopped working. Like her finger wouldn't move. Her finger wouldn't move. Some of her texts.
It's a surprise that the camera, you're going. As I say, it's a surprise well that the camera worked in such cold conditions.
Didn't always. And there was moments where it was like, we can't, we've got to let it warm up for a minute. So there was all of that. But honestly, I feel like the team, the people that I work with are A, that honoured that they're like a part of this. And I'm that honoured that they are a part of this, that we're all just like, let's do this. And it feels really good. And you can feel the care. So you have to have commitment. You cannot just hire any old model and be like, we want you to do this. It has to be people that are friends or that are obsessed with the brand that you've worked with for a long time and you've got that passion. And you know what? Minus 20, so fun. It was really cold, but we had such a laugh. It was so fun.
It was a laugh. It looks amazing. I mean, the photos that you got from it were absolutely stunning. So it was definitely worthwhile. Before we finish up, I want to finish on one last thing. Well, a couple of things. But yeah, one of them being, as a brand, like, I mean, you were talking about it a second ago about how, you know, promoting strippers and stuff. How do you broach that topic? Because do you ever have any problems with the stripper community saying that you're profiting from the stripper community? Or do you ever have any problems with that crossover between the two industries?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, like I was a dancer. We've always said designed by dancers for dancers. I'm retired. I am part of that community. If they're going to have a go at us, they should have a go at the other brands that are owned by elderly men. So I think we'd be the least like Pleaser, yeah, like by an old guy.
Because that's not owned. That's owned by an old guy.
Yeah, I wore those shoes for years. And I was like, why don't they just make the platforms black all the way through? why don't they make it this way? Why don't they make it that way? I'll tell you why, because they knew that they were the only people that could sell those shoes at that point. And so people were getting ripped off and they didn't care. Yes, I want people to buy regularly from me, but because they love the styles, they want a new style. They want to look hot in a new outfit. So if we would ever get any slack from the stripper community, I would personally start messaging, or my social media manager would send them to me, I reckon, because then I could just speak to them and be like, hey, I'm not profiting from anything. We are part of that community.
Yeah. And how important is it to you as a brand to make sure that there is that kind of unity with the stripper community? Because obviously these shoes were predominantly made originally for them, right? So how important is that to Hella as a brand?
It's really important. So all of our Hell girls and Hell boys, not just people that we might gift to, but our specific, like Hell girls, Hell boys, I think it's like 90% of them. It's only a small little group, but 90% of them were or are strippers. We sponsor events like Miss Nude, so it's not all pole competition events. Okay. And I think even from our aesthetic and our vibe, you can tell we're here for the strip clubs as well as the pole studios. Yeah,
right. I think that's so important. I love that you do that. And actually, I've noticed as well, like even on your social media, it's very pro stripper, and I think that the stripper community are probably super grateful for that. And I love that as well, that social media person, you'd only just met them for the first time after like 4 years, just a little while ago. That's pretty cool. And then the last thing that I just wanted to talk about and I wanted to ask about was the like how you deal with as a brand with so many, like we talked about pleasers just then. Obviously pleasers were like the big name, still are really, I guess. I assume they're probably the market leader. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I would say so.
Right. Because they've been around for years. I mean, they've been around ever since I've done pole, and obviously that's what the strippers have been wearing for years now. What about the smaller businesses that are coming in? Like, how do you manage to stay up there with the likes of Pleaser and make sure that, you know, how do you deal with the competition, basically, I guess I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think generally try and avoid. So we just stay in our lane. We keep doing what we're doing. If anyone does anything like, for example, copies all of our website copy word for word, apart from changing our name to theirs, obviously then we'll kind of do something about it and sort of send a message to be like, hey, please stop taking shortcuts. This should be common sense. Do your own thing. But generally just staying in the lane. And I think it's far more apparent in the pole wear industry, where there are a load of different brands. A lot of them also like similar size to my pole wear brand. And the likes of Luna, for example, Luna Lay, Fion, who owns that, so much respect. They stay in their lane. They have, I would consider it to be far more like girlier style generally. And they do their thing. And you can see it's their thing, and I'm happy to be in the market with them because there's room for everyone, and I don't feel like they're ripping off other people. Same for us, like we're a bit edgier maybe, like we do a bit of this, a bit of that, and we're staying in a lane. We're getting inspired by things that isn't inspired by another brand and then just ripping it off. Rude. We're inspired, like I personally, I get inspired by nail design, by something in nature, by a colorway of, I don't know, bloody a Formula One car, like anything. And I'm like, oh, that would be kind of cute if we did it like this. Get inspired, but inspired is not copying. You've got to get inspired from outward sources, you know? And then you stay in your lane, you do your thing. And I have a lot of respect for a lot of the other brands in the pole wear market, because I feel like they're staying in the lane. They're doing their thing and they're doing things originally. Sorte is one of the brands that I respect a lot. And I was about to launch something and they launched it, and we were about 2 weeks out from launch and they looked so similar. And I messaged them and I was like, hey, just to let you know, here's the pictures right here of all of our stuff now. It's going to look really bad, but in 2 weeks, we've got something coming out that looks, the top looks like it's, I think it was the top, quite similar to your stuff. And they were so nice about it. And they were like, don't worry. Thank you for letting us know, because obviously letting them know makes it, so that I'm not just bringing something out and then they go, hold on a minute.
They've copied
and then about
shit,
six months later, they messaged us and were like, oh, that thing you just brought out, we have this and it looks really similar. And I'm like, okay, don't worry. So there is, of course, going to be crossover. And I think there's a lot of good energy within us Polwear brand owners. I know a lot of them. I have a lot of respect for them. I feel like our brands are very, very distinct. And I think that that is a beautiful thing. So yeah, just stay in your lane. Don't copy. If you copy, yeah, we might send a message, but we're still just going to do us. And if you copy, you're still behind, you know? So yeah, that's what I do to stay ahead. I just do me. And I do it with integrity. I would also like to add integrity. You have to. You can't just copy. You can't rip off stuff. You can't take shortcuts. It makes you look cheap and shit. It does. Do your own thing. For me personally, going out to the factories, working with the factories is really important for me. People might go, oh, it's a bit cheaper. Do they know who's making that stuff? Who's in those factories making those stuff? Is there a good airflow? Is the radio playing? Is it a good environment? Are there children? You don't know. Go to the factories. I've always wanted to profit with integrity. I will not profit from trampling on other people from any country. And so I think that's really important too. So if brands are going to rip off me by taking off my website, like they give a crap about who's making their stuff, make sure you buy from brands that you trust from source.
And do you still use Chinese factories? Because I know you went, was it you that went to China to check?
Yeah, absolutely. I go to China all the time. I love the people there. I think they are deserving of work 100%. They're really amazing at what they do. They specialize in it because manufacturing has left the UK and Australia and the US as well for so long now. So if you want that kind of skill set, China and a few other obviously countries is the place to go, but you should work with those factories. You should actually visit them, see who's in there, see if it stinks of glue or if the windows are wide open and it's a nice, light, airy space. See what time people come in. I'm the first one in that factory and I'm the last to leave. Like people leave at 6 p.m. That's a nice thing. I see that. I see people going on their lunch breaks, chatting, the radio playing. I visited some factories in my past, which I've never worked with, that I've gone, I could not work with this. I could not sleep at night and live happily knowing that this is the factory I work with. But the factories I work with, I feel really proud of. I work really closely with. I speak to the people in the factory. I speak to the owners on the daily. And we also have separate QC, independent companies to go in, not just to QC the product, and stuff does slip through, of course. You might miss something or a glue stain or a rogue stitch or whatever. But I have separate QC go into those factories on the daily, and they know all of the things that are really important to me. So there's not going to be me going over to China on my little trip and then I leave and all of a sudden kids get brought out or everything goes to crap. You know, I'm really, as you can probably tell from my ranting a little bit, but I'm really passionate about that. People deserve to have a good workplace. They deserve to have respect. It doesn't matter what country you're from. And yeah, that's expensive. It's going to add to the cost of products. It's going to add to everything. Having a separate quality check company come in and check it every day and make sure there's this and make sure that, of course, it adds to the cost of products.
But did you do that at the beginning?
You do stuff with integrity. Yeah.
But when you did it at the beginning, how did you do that at the beginning with no money? How did you go and visit China and stuff at the beginning with no money?
Because right in the beginning for the clothing, we sold other people's clothing. Like we were a Bembo stockist. I don't remember Eva Bembo.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Of course.
I stocked another brand. I screen printed my own T-shirts here in Australia. I did a heap of stuff and I saved up. That's when I first went out. That's how I afforded that first trip.
I went with
a heap of factories on a trade trip. So I did a trade trip out there and I visited a load of factories. It was like a government scheme, I believe, at the time, like a trade trip thing. But the XXTs, we stocked Artista as well. I don't know if they're still going, but it was like a brand from the US. Like we stocked brands that were not sold readily and available in the UK. And so I stocked other people's brands with a smaller margin and I screen printed the Pussy Power T-shirts and the XX T-shirts and I screen printed them myself. And that's how I saved up the money. And it was after maybe like a year or 8 months or however long it was before I got to go to China. So, yeah.
That's cool. No, that is really cool. I love that. Well, it's been amazing talking to you. I feel like I could talk to you forever. And I'm just so inspired by everything that you're doing. So thank you so much for coming on and doing this podcast with me. Tell me what's coming up. What can we see from you in the future?
Oh, well, we've got our birthday month with Hella next month. It's turning, Hella turns 4. The theme is, not announced yet, but by the time this has come out, we'll be born to be wild because we're born for our birthday. And it's all an animal theme. So we've got like mad thigh highs with like snakes embroidered up the side and the snake's tongue is a little H and it's so cool. And the white snake that we have on it is like glow under the blue light as like a massive tattoo style thing up the side. Sick.
Nice.
And then the other three drops we have are all animalistic too. So we've got some croc prints that contrast the others on the same shoe. We've got some leopard print. We've got some sparkly print, which everyone loves a sparkle.
Everyone loves
sparkles,
that's
what's coming
right
in the near future for Hella. For the clothing, for creatures, for CXAX, I do want to bring out a lot more stuff that would be really great for the mainstream dance market. That's my goal.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Yay. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be awesome. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for all your support for my projects. And yes, I look forward to hopefully seeing you sometime soon. But until then, bye.
Bye.
See you, babe. Bye.
See ya.
Hey, thank you so much for watching this episode. Really hope you enjoyed it. And if you have any people that you would love to see on the podcast, please drop me a DM. I would love to hear from you at Dan Rosenpohl. Until next time, bye.
That was all the tea that you can get this week. Join me next time right here. It's the Weekly Tea.